Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
HRN has a brand new look, but we're sharing the same delicious stories. Invest in the future of food radio by becoming a monthly sustaining member at heritageradionetwork.org/donate.
Hello, welcome to Japan Eats. I'm your host, Akiko Tema, food writer and director of the New York Japanese Culinary Academy, which promotes a deep understanding of Japanese cuisine in America. This show is all about Japanese food and food culture. We see sushi at every deli in the supermarket, but what is beyond sushi? We hear dashi, ramen, izakaya, but what exactly are they? Japanese food is still a mystery for many people, and I try to demystify it in this program with my cool guest. My guest today is Yoshi Tezuka, the fourth-generation sushi chef at the Matsunosushi in Tokyo, which was founded in 1910. Yoshi is not just a great sushi chef, but also a global thinker. Before he became a sushi chef, Yoshi spent years abroad as a professional ski guide as well as a backpacker and traveled to over 50 countries. Now he cooks for a global audience worldwide on a whole variety of occasions, such as the World Expo and the First Lady Luncheon at the G20 Summit. He was also invited by the British royal family to cook for them. Also, Yoshi actively educates students and tourists about sushi and Japanese culture through various unique programs. So today we'll discuss why Yoshi decided to make sushi for an international audience, the challenges he faces in making sushi outside Japan, his philosophy of sustainability, how to pair fish with wine. By the way, Yoshi is a certified wine sommelier too, and much, much more. But before we start, Japan Eats is available on Heritage Radio Network website, as well as on iTunes, Stitcher, and Spotify as a podcast. So please go to iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, whichever you listen to, and subscribe to Japan Eats. And please write a review. We really appreciate your feedback. Now, let's start a conversation with Yoshi Tezuka. Hello, Yoshi. Welcome to the show.
Hello. Thank you, Akiko.
Very exciting to have you here. Finally, we've been meeting in New York.
Exactly. Finally, we got it.
Right. So, first of all, so where are you from and what did you eat when you grew up?
Okay. My name is Yoshi. I'm from Japan. I was born in Tokyo. I have eaten typical Japanese food like rice, miso soup, dry fish, so on. And of course, I often eat toast and cereal as a breakfast. And I often eat sushi too. So when I was, for example, my house is located just beside my restaurant. So when I was a high school and junior high school student, when I come back from school, I stopped by my father's restaurant and ate some sushi, which is some seasonable fish and seasonable tuna, because even tuna taste is different each season. So it's kind of training. And also, when I ate sushi, I could realize my father's conditions depend on how much sushi rice is soft and hard. So, and also, I can find out who made sushi rice in my restaurant. Because, as you know, sushi rice is mixed up rice and vinegar. So there are many staff to cook it at that time. So it's just kind of my secret game. So I find out who made today's sushi rice song.
Wow. Yeah, I was going to say you were spoiled eating sushi from such a young age, but almost on a daily basis. But it's also training. Also, you worked as a kind of a supervisor of the restaurant.
Yeah. Yeah, sushi was my soul food. So, you know, very familiar, more than McDonald's for me.
Wow.
That's a luxury, I have to say. So I heard you began accompanying your father to the Tsukiji sushi market, fish market, which is the so-called the world's biggest fish market, and at a very young age, and learned to distinguish the quality of fish, and you knew you'd be a sushi chef one day. And then you went to Keio Daigaku, one of the best universities in Japan, and traveled all over the world as a professional ski guide and also as a backpacker. So why did you spend so much time outside of Japan?
Well, I worked as a ski guide for 4 years, and I guided over 100 ski resorts and visited many countries. And actually, well, I skied 250 days in a year. And when snow disappeared, I also worked as a private guide on the world cruise ship or backpacker. Wow. And yeah, exactly. Actually, I decided to take over my family job since I was 5 or 6 years old. So I always focus on the food when I visit many countries. So I wanted to learn other countries' culture and food. Oh, of course, I love skiing. So I wanted to do skiing in many places. But at the same time, I enjoyed different culture communications. So, because I have decided to welcome the guests from all over the world in the future. So I wanted to know the culture in other countries, other food, and what they like. And I think the real globalization is know own culture and understand each other. So I believe travel many countries is necessary to my future plan.
Right. Well, I also heard that you even lived in Italy for a while. So when was it and what did you do in Italy back then?
Actually, when I was a ski guide, I stayed just 1 year in Italy. And after I became a sushi chef, well, I think I visited Italy. I have visited Italy since once a year. So I worked on Milano Expo, or I was invited on Terra Madre event, which is for slow food.
So all those years and experiences, so when did you start working with your father at the Matsunosushi?
Well, actually, when I was 27, I come back to Matsunosushi. Well, after ski guide life, I returned to Japan when I was 26. Then I got some training in 1 year at the other sushi restaurant. Well, actually, I started cutting fish since I was a high school student. So I know how to cut the fish. I had a skills. But, my father and other staff said I should learn the many things in other restaurant. So Japan has some custom eat food from other house. It means I should work in other restaurant before taking over my family job.
So where did you work?
Well, I went to my father's friend's restaurant. That is a very small restaurant. Because if I go to the big restaurant, I will do the casual job. I mean the clean up, washing dish. But, my father want me to experience the whole job. So that's why I went to the small restaurant in Tokyo.
Right. So did you find different practice or what did you learn from that experience?
Well, it was quite interesting because my restaurant is typical sushi restaurant. Just cutting fish and making sushi. But when the restaurant which I trained was a kind of Japanese restaurant, So they always take care of the seasonable decorated and how to use the leaf, how to use the flower, seasonable flower on the table, on the dishes. That is quite new for me.
That's like a Kaiseki style mindset, right? You chase the seasons. And even Kaiseki world, it's not only four seasons, they say 24 seasons or even more sometimes. So.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. Okay. And so what is special about sushi to you personally compared to other categories of food?
Well, I think sushi is very interesting food because sushi made with a bare hand and using raw fish and cooking process is very simple. You know, the just cut and, can I say grip? Cut and grip. But one piece of sushi has many backstory and many cultural things, in my opinion. Yeah, actually, sushi chef is specialized for the fish. So when we selected the fish at the market, we checked, so where these fish come from? Well, because the place is different, the feed and taste is completely different. And also that we checked how to catch the fish. So even same fish, catching way is different. Taste is going to be a big difference. You know, the fishing way, netting way, towing way, completely different. And we have many ways to catch the fish. And also we checked who catches the fish. That is also very important information for us. So because treatment is very important.
Right. Well, we'll talk about sustainability later. So we'll discuss that. But so before that, what is your mission as a sushi chef?
Okay. Well, I want to tell the Japanese culture through the sushi to all over the world. Actually, sushi is getting popular now, but well, many people doesn't know beyond the sushi story of beyond the sushi. It's like a Japanese craftsman job. So I want to introduce Japanese culture into the world through the sushi positively. So I often do the catering all over the world. So I told sushi counter its connection of Japanese culture. And I need just one tatami mat. It's like a 2 square meter to make a sushi. So I can make sushi everywhere in the world. So in the hospital room, in private jet, on the ship. So I want to convey the sushi simplified Japanese culture that makes everyone happy, everyone in other country. And I said sushi diplomacy.
Well said. Well, the sushi is... typically the simplest food, probably of the world, one of the simplest foods of the world. And, but there's so much packed in it from, like you said, how, where the fish comes from, how it's caught, who processed the food, who butchered the fish, how it's killed and up to you, sushi chef. So yeah, this is not just one type of food. It's so much almost representing Japanese history as well.
Yeah. So at the same time, it is, if people understand the story beyond the sushi, so I can tell the splendor of the Japanese culture more.
Right. Yeah, I have so much more to learn from you. So we'll continue our conversation, but we'll take a quick break here. When we come back, we'll dive into Yoshi's sushi making experiences all over the world. So please stay with us.
HRN is excited to unveil the new look of Food Radio. We have a new brand identity and a new website. Our site makes it easier than ever to discover new podcasts and to dig through our archive of over 15,000 episodes. It's been 11 years since HRN started broadcasting food radio, and we've made it this far thanks to the support of our global listening community. It's because of member donations that this show is on the air, along with 40 other weekly shows. Your contributions gave HRN the security we needed to stay on the airwaves during the pandemic, and are allowing us to reopen our studio in Roberta's. Becoming a monthly sustaining member of HRN shows us how much food radio means to you. Become a monthly sustaining member at heritageradionetwork.org/donate.
Welcome back. You're listening to Japan Eats. I'm your host, Akiko Tema, and my guest today is Yoshi Tezuka, the fourth generation sushi chef at Matsunosushi in Tokyo, which was originally founded in 1910. Yoshi has been introducing sushi for global audience in numerous countries on a wide variety of occasions, such as the World Expo and the British Royal Family Dinner. So before COVID, how often did you travel abroad to make sushi, and in how many different cities or countries have you cooked?
Well, about once a month or once in 2 months, I go to the other country to make a sushi. And I think I visited over 15 countries to make a sushi.
Wow. Then I heard that you have made sushi on many important occasions, like I mentioned earlier, such as the Milan World Expo and the First Lady Luncheon and G20 Summit in Osaka, and also the British Royal Family inviting you to cook for them. So, but in general, who do you make sushi for when you travel outside Japan, and what kind of occasions?
Well, non-Japanese guests invite me to their other countries. So when I visited New York City, well, I went a couple of times to make a sushi as a private party, such as a birthday party, or actually I made a sushi for I.M. Pei, 100 years old birthday party, who is a very famous Chinese architecture living in New York City. And sometimes some company invite me for some brand party or brand event. Well, I went to the Paris in the fashion week. So the one brand invite me for the loyal customer to make a sushi party, and they want to welcome the guests at a special Japanese sushi party. And also Japanese embassy invite me to the other country because they hold some Japanese party for the local people. So I do not provide just sushi, and I offer the Japanese culture. So I served sushi with some Japanese culture dishes or very traditional equipment.
Right. And, you're not just a great sushi chef, but you're a good communicator. You can speak in English. And also, well, listeners, it's a shame you can't see Yoshi. He's a great looking man. So that's another thing. Well, by the way, Matsunosushi is known for great edamame-style sushi. So what is edamame-style sushi for listeners who are not familiar with the style of sushi? And, so go ahead.
Okay, so it is an interesting question because even Japanese people doesn't know exactly the meaning of edamame style. I think edamame has two meanings. The first one is... Edomae means the in front of Edo, which Edo means the old name of Tokyo, so it means a fresh fish coming from the Tokyo Bay. So because sushi use a raw fish, so the vegetable is very important. And second meaning is it means technique. So actually, edamame technique or cooking way is how to keep fish longer, and also the skill to make a fish more delicious and raw. Well, because of sushi history, well, actually sushi started 1,000 years ago in west part of Japan. At that time, we ate just fish, no rice. The rice was too for fermentation. Then fish sushi culture moved to Tokyo 200 years ago. So then we started fish and rice together. There actually the today's style sushi, I mean fish and rice eating together, started at Tokyo. That's why we called often Edomae style.
Right. Yeah, there are different variation of sushi, such as oshizushi, is like a pressed sushi in the box, and different. But I think edamame is more visually appealing. It looks like a jewelry sometimes. And I heard edamame style sushi started as a snack sold in the cart. So yeah. It's like a fast food. And exactly. Nowadays, right, it's almost amazing. You can find all the sushi at like I said at the beginning, it's like every day in the supermarket you can find sushi.
Exactly.
So, right?
Yeah.
Do you change the style of sushi, classic style of edamame sushi, depending on who you cook for when you cook outside of Japan?
I think edamame sushi means just nigiri style, which is a very popular style, rice and fish. So I always make edamame style sushi to the non-Japanese guests, even in other country. Well, of course, I make some rolls. Well, sometimes I make the rolls, you know, California roll style. I mean, inside out style, because we can decorate it. We can decorate it and it looks great. But basically, I made a edamame style sushi, which is a nigiri style.
That's essential. But by the way, I can make sushi rolls. I have made sushi rolls. That was okay.
Ooh,
but
great.
I
can, great.
But I can never, ever make nigiri. Nigiri is like, it's just too much of skills.
Yeah, it's difficult. It's very
it's
difficult.
It's impossible.
Yeah. Because some foreign guests try to make a sushi in my restaurant. I will talk later. But everyone says, wow, it's so difficult, is it?
Right. And because, you know, when you, sushi chef, cooks behind the counter, it's so fast and quick. And I was like, okay, it's very easy. It's not. The rice falls apart and then it's kind of, everything gets a big mess. So I would never try that. So we have a high respect for sushi chefs.
Thank you very much.
So as this fourth generation of Matsunosushi, do you think you are changing your father's style of sushi for any reasons, such as shift in customer demand?
Yeah, I think so. Well, because the generation is different and the customer is different compared with my father. Actually, my father's customer is almost Japanese people. But my customer is not only Japanese people and also new generations coming in my restaurant. So, well, I think what is the big difference is between me and my father is I'm always talking to the guest. That is big difference. Because my father talks to guests. Oh, actually, my father doesn't speak too much and talks to the guests through the sushi. So he made a great sushi. That's it. No speak out.
Right.
But in my opinion, well, there are many people which has different culture background. So I need to tell them the story of fish and food, or I must think about the way to the way of the hospitality that matched each. So I polish a technique to realize it, but I do not change the. My polishing, but I do not change that. I make sushi in total into the, a customer individually in front.
Right. So in other words, your style is as classic as your father, although you sometimes add some, creative sushi, but you have another mission to communicate.
Exactly.
To educate customers.
Yeah. Actually, I'm doing the same thing with my father, but what's the big difference is I'm always talking to the guests and telling the story, why I selected this fish, why I served this fish now or something like that.
Right. That's very important because sometimes, going to sushi restaurant and sit at the counter, it's kind of intimidating, right? If you don't know how to order. Right. So that's important.
Exactly.
Right. And then, but how do you get fresh fish when you cook abroad?
Well, actually, I bring everything. I bring almost everything. Well, basically, I take all fish and material from Japan. Well, because, well, what I am at having you just experience Japan, so I'm doing a preparation to be able to make a hospitality same as Japan into everywhere in the world. So that's why I bring everything, because I have a special fish box which can keep same temperature and same humid for 72 hours. So I can go anywhere. But on the other hand, I always add the local fish, which is very familiar for the guest. And then I make a new sushi, or I using an edamame skill to cook for it, because it's very familiar food for the guest. So I always think how to enjoy or how to customer enjoy to my sushi.
Right. So by bringing most and also having familiar fish for customers, you can just focus on communicating and educating your customers. Right. But, you've been many countries and you cook on many occasions. So, could you share some thrilling episodes that you have while you cooked abroad?
Yeah, I have a lot of thrilling story actually. But but it's the newest one. Newest one is actually in New York City. So I got a lost baggage. So I went to the New York City as a connection flight from Japan. So I arrived in New York City via Los Angeles, but fish goes Atlanta.
Whoa.
So fish didn't coming out. So problem is my schedule is always tight because I bring a fresh fish from Japan, no frozen fish. So usually I have a party on the same day when I arrived. So I will go to my guest house directly from the airport. So but at that time fish didn't coming out. Fortunately I waited 4 or 5 hours and the fish was coming. So I went to my guest house to make a sushi. So I couldn't make it.
I'm sure you're sweating like a whale while you're waiting. Yeah. Okay. And so, by the way, you are also a certified wine sommelier. So what are the basic rules of wine and sushi pairings?
Well, it's just kind of difficult. Well, of course, why I get a wine sommelier license? Because when I focus to the world, the main alcohol is wine. That's why I get that license. But as many Japanese people enjoy sake with sushi because the sake always wash in your mouth and prepare to the next fish. So wine is different thinking way. The wine is laid up. Wine when I using a wine, the very important thing is matching with food. So right. My policy is the red on red and white on white. That is my policy. If I using a tuna or a bonito, I recommend the red wine. So the white wine fits when I use a white fish or we put the flavor of lemon or the salt.
Right. So listeners, it's easy. You pick the color of wine, right? But you know, some people say Riesling is good with sushi for some reasons, the acidity and sweetness and the balance. Mm-hmm. And one time I used not to like Gamay, which is used to Beaujolais wine. And when I had a glass of Gamay with tuna, I was like, wow, what is this pairing? Because both have some kind of, it's like an iron, like a bloodiness in the taste. So that was a very complimentary pairing. And since then, I started to like Gamay thanks to sushi, which I never expected. Right. So let's talk about sustainability. So when you talk about sushi, we need to talk about it. So what is your philosophy of sustainability?
Well, I focus on the sustainable seafood too, because SDGs is getting popular in Japan and also all over the world, especially seafood. But in my opinion, Japan has an older technique. Well, Japanese fishing way has been same since 400 years ago. That is already sustainable things. And also I supported a Sailor for the Sea, which was founded by David Rockefeller Jr. in 2004, and they opened a Japan branch in 2011. And they are very supportive to help the Blue Seafood Guide program, which is making a sustainable movement in Japan. Actually, my restaurant is Japan's first traditional sushi restaurant who obtained a chain of custody certification from MSC and ASC to trade a sub-certified sustainable seafood.
Right. And also you cooked at the slow food event in Torino, Italy.
Yeah.
Right. Exactly. That's slow food. So, right. It's very consistent. Okay. So it is possible. If you are careful, you can be sustainable even if you make sushi. And by the way, and Japanese people, unlike you grew up in a sushi restaurant like Yoshi, Japanese people don't eat sushi every day.
Exactly.
Once a month or like very rare.
Yeah, very rare. Well, the many Japanese people enjoy the rotating sushi restaurant, which is also the one kind of sushi restaurants. But my restaurant is kind of very traditional sushi restaurant. It's kind of it's a very expensive sushi restaurant. So it's the same sushi, but a different style. But rotating sushi restaurant is a good thing for understand the sushi culture and fish culture for all Japanese people.
Right. For listeners who are not familiar with the rotating sushi restaurant, that's like basically there's a conveyor belt running through in a circle, and then you can see actual sushi that's already placed in the tray, and you pick whatever you want.
Yeah, that is easy.
Right.
Easy to understand. Well, my restaurant is the guests have to order what they want to eat. You know, even Japanese people, it's very difficult because they should know the fish name, the seasonable. So that is very hard.
Right. Yeah. Well, that's why I always sit at the counter and ask what is good. It's just the easiest one, and then you get educated.
Yeah.
So, right. And so I heard that you actively educate students and tourists through unique programs about sushi and Japanese culture. So could you tell us about those programs?
Oh, yes. Yeah. I have supported an educational program in Keio University, which is a private university in Japan, and also and the Culinary Institute of America in America in every year. Mm. The student of this college can choose my class when they visit Japan, and they learn sushi culture and Japanese food history, and they can try to make sushi. Mm. And also, I provide a special tour for foreign travelers in Japan. And if they order, they can go fish market with me, and they watch how to select the fish and how to cook the fish together. So, and they can learn, of course, for how to cut the fish. Mm. Well, actually, telling a fish things culture out, telling a fish culture and telling a Japanese food to young generation and travelers is very important things. That's my opinion. So I often do these educational things.
Right. It's more interactive and participating style.
Yeah.
That's right. That's and how also, you learn.
Yeah, and also fun. Well, they enjoy it. You know, when they try to make a nigiri style, the rice stick their hand. So it's going to be panic. So it's just very fun.
You don't know what to do with it at the beginning. And unlike just licking your fingers, you have to make it into a ball. So, by the way, so let's go back to you. You teach at the Culinary Institute of America, which is called the Harvard of the culinary world. Mm-hmm. So you go to CIE in New York?
Oh, actually, you know, when they come to Japan, they have some Japanese Japan trip. So
right.
Once a year,
exchange.
They come to to Tokyo, or no, to right. Japan, and they visit many cities, Tokyo, Kyoto, Osaka, so on. So, right. When they stayed in Tokyo, usually I teach it in 2 days. So first I guided a fish market. So I tell them how to select the fish, what's the difference of fish, and what's the difference old market and new market, or so on. And the second day I tell how to cut the fish. It's the Japanese cooking way, because how to use the knife technique is completely different, the Western style and Japanese style. So I tell them how to cut the fish, how to make the fish, how to make a sushi, how to make a sushi rice, or like that.
They need a month to everything. Well, wow, that's exciting. I mean, I hope you visit the CIA in America too, because
I
hope sure.
Too. So if CIA New York School listen to this radio, please invite me.
Right, so I'll push.
Okay, good.
And then you also work with charity called Shine on Kids.
Oh, yes.
Right, so what did you do for them?
Oh, the Shine on Kids is a charity program. So one of my vision is everyone makes happy through the sushi. So I supported that charity program. The Shine on Kids is supported facility dog who take care of children of the childhood cancer. So every year I take part in the charity event, which is kind of auction event. So I donated my sushi making program for 10 people. So the audience beat the prize that program. So every year, the price over the $10,000.
Wow.
So
wow.
I donated that price to the charity organization.
Amazing. So I looked up the website, and then, you know, having a dog. She's very important for them. And basically, kids have cancers and they need care, not just medical care, but even for after they leave the hospital, they need some mental stability for what they went through and physical pain. So having a dog makes their lives so much easier, and I heard, and what are you doing? It's just amazing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a very good program, I think.
Yeah. So, by the way, so Japan is still dealing with spikes of COVID cases, as we know, as right before the Olympics. So how are you coping with the whole pandemic situation?
Well, it's quite a difficult situation because, you know, we can't drink alcohol in our restaurants. So the guests just enjoy eating sushi. But, of course, many people enjoy sushi with sake and wine. So, well, actually, I'm often doing a delivery and also catering. Well, because delivery sushi style is a very traditional style. So we have done delivery style since long time ago. Actually, well, I told you, you told me I'm fourth generation. So my restaurant started 1910, but about, we did a delivery style maybe 1930 or 1940. So it's kind of a professional delivery restaurant.
Right.
And also catering. Well, I did a catering for all over the world, but also I'm doing it in domestic style. So I built a private house. I built a no ordinary house to make a sushi for just 6 or 8 family people. It's very relaxed time and everyone enjoys sushi.
Right. So that the prohibition of drinking alcohol at the restaurant, once people start drinking, they tend to stay longer and they chat and they probably spread the COVID more frequently. But I really think a lot of food industry people are angry at that policy, because it's the fact is that the whole cases are not mainly coming out of restaurants, right? So there is a lot of room to discuss, but I'm so glad that you are doing well and surviving well.
Surviving.
Right. Yeah, but hopefully it's going to be, I think the vaccination is going pretty fast in Japan. Mm-hmm. So
hopefully.
Yeah, right. Okay. By the way, so you've been to Tokyo Central Fish Market, right? Mm-hmm. That's moved from Tsukiji to Toyosu. So as an expert of fish market, what do you think about the change?
Well, so the Tsukiji, and we have two fish market? Yeah, we have a Toyosu market and we have a Tsukiji market. The Tsukiji market is old one. Actually, I visited two markets every morning. Not only Toyosu, but also Tsukiji too. Because the Toyosu is specialized for the fish. But Tsukiji is weak. I can get many other things, like a chopstick, traditional equipment, the knife, or everything. Actually, Toyosu market is more hygienic than Tsukiji market. That is good things and also beautiful. And Toyosu can control the temperature, each section, each rooms. And that is very important things because the fish is very sensitive. As you know, they're living different deep in the ocean. So each fish has a different suitable temperature. So Toyosu control everything. But the Tsukiji also has a old atmosphere. So some people say that, the Tsukiji was great. And for me, I beat the Tsukiji market since I was a child. So it's kind of sad.
Right. I mean, the Tsukiji, it was a very old structure and it's actually open air. So even if the fish is super fresh, you don't feel any fishiness. It's almost like ocean smell throughout the facilities. Mm. But it's kind of dangerous because as a visitor, they're like, exactly. Carts running through. Yeah. And I think actually a couple people here, they get hit by the cart. So
it was exactly. So when I was a child, well, that car moved on my foot.
Ooh.
That is often. Well, I mean, it's normal things.
Yeah, that was so it's an improvement. But yeah, like you said, there's a beautiful ambience and the surrounding structures have old shops, and you can have different traditional sushi related items. So it's like nice shops. And I'm so glad that they are still, existing. As a part of the culture.
Yeah, that is also the family job for them. You know, my father get some fish from their father. So, you know, they're doing a family job too. So always changing just generation. They keep the same shops.
Right. And also Toyosu is not too far. It's also within, Tokyo. Yeah. So. Right.
Almost same time. It takes to the same time for me.
Right. Okay. So what are your plans for the future after the pandemic?
Well, I try to go abroad many things, you know, and telling Japanese culture through sushi with our young staff, because, the catering style is easy to tell the Japanese culture to the people who living in other country. And also I want to do the culture things. Well, like a speech of a Japanese fisherman things or sustainable fish things. Well, if I tell the true story of a Japanese food, everyone realizes how Japanese food is healthy and good more than now. So I'm telling a true story beyond the Japanese food, beyond the sushi.
Well, I'm glad what you're doing is available. And like in New York, many other cities started to open. And here in New York City in mid-July, it's almost nothing happened last year.
Really?
So yeah, I see even supermarkets, if you go to Whole Foods, you don't have to wear masks, which is interesting.
Wow.
And it's just amazing how vaccination changed the whole world so quickly. So hopefully you can start traveling again.
I hope so. And to meet you, Rio.
Right. Yeah. Okay. So I look forward to seeing you in New York and eating some sushi from hopefully.
I bring you Japanese fish, né?
Yeah, well, I can't wait. And so I'm sure some of the listeners or more of our listeners wants to have, your kind of interesting experience. So where can we find you online and on social media? And, I'm sure they want to dine, of course, at your restaurant, which is beautiful. And also, some people wants to have your catering service outside Japan. Oh. So where should they go?
Oh, well, of course you can. Anyone can connect me through my homepage, which is matsunozushi.com. And also I have an Instagram, so Yoshi, Yoshi, _ Matsunozushi, MatsunoZushi. So just give me a message. I can fly anywhere.
Awesome. Okay. So, well, thank you so much for joining us today, Yoshi.
Thank you very much, Akiko.
And good luck.
Thank you.
So listeners, if you have any questions or comments about the show or suggestions for show topics or guests, please contact us at japaneseheritageradionetwork.org or akikotema.com. Japanese is a weekly program and always available at heritageradionetwork.org as well as on iTunes, Stitcher, and Spotify as a podcast. Our engineer is Matt Patterson, and thank you for listening. I will see you next week. Japan Eats is powered by Simplecast. Thank you for listening to Heritage Radio Network, Food Radio supported by you. For freshest content, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Instagram and Twitter at heritage_radio. You can also find us at facebook.com/heritageradionetwork. Heritage Radio Network is a non-profit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Subscribe to the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join the HRN family by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thank you for listening.
Hi, listeners. We want to tell you about a podcast we're really digging. It's called Christopher Kimball's Milk Street Radio. Every week, they travel the world to find the most fascinating stories about food, including children who harvest cod tongues after school in Norway and a detective who tracks down food thieves. And on Milk Street Radio, you can always find the unexpected. The comedian who ranks apples using an elaborate 100-point system, the secret history of grocery stores, and how to eat your way through Italy. They also interview the most beloved names in food like Jacques Pepin, Sola Aweli, Jose Andres, Jet Tila, Ina Garten, Nigella Lawson, and Padma Lakshmi. Plus, co-hosts Christopher Kimball and Sarah Moulton do live calls with listeners and answer their questions about ingredients, techniques, and culinary mysteries. Like, why roasting a leg of lamb made one caller's oven explode? Ever wonder why your bread won't rise or your souffle falls flat? Chris and Sarah have the answers. You'll also hear from a rotating cast of contributors, including Kenji Lopez-Alt, Cheryl Day, Dan Pashman from The Sporkful, and Alex Inouz, a French guy cooking from YouTube. Take a listen at 177milkstreet.com/radio or just search your podcast app for Milk Street Radio.